It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4 to 1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
It's not just what President Trump said during that phone call with Vladimir Putin. It is also what he did not say that has some in his own party angry this morning.
This would be like J. Edgar Hoover as the director of the FBI calling Al Capone to congratulate him on a bank robbery.
President Trump went out of his way to praise Putin and not bring up extraordinarily important and controversial topics.
It's just the latest in what is obviously a long pattern of behavior by this president.
The president often congratulates leaders who are not democratically elected. He often gives autocratic and dictators congratulations.
Donald Trump, not the first president to make a mistake about Vladimir Putin. The other ones changed their course. We'll see if he ever can.
President Trump to this day has said nastier things publicly about me, Don Lemon, Chuck Todd, Meryl Streep, and the cast of Hamilton than he has of former KGB operative and current human rights repressor Vladimir Putin.
All right, so that's the media going apoplectic, making this a bigger story than it probably should be. Of course, the big story here is that someone inside the White House, inside the national security apparatus, leaked the private briefing that the president gets every day, the national security briefing. Somebody leaked to the press that it said in caps, don't, whatever you do, don't congratulate President Putin. When you talk to him, in other words, this is guidance. So they leaked that, of course, to make the president look stupid, like he's in collusion, like you fill in the blanks, whatever people might think, that's what they're saying. And of course, you know, this is, let me just speak it in as clear a terms as I can. Let's put it this way. Let's compare the president congratulating Vladimir Putin, who is a dictator, really, whose election was a farce, who has, we believe, been poisoning people for a very long time, by the way, and killing. I remember I said this yesterday. I remember when all these Russian sailors were trapped in this accident, and he was so flippant about that. Do you remember that? That was a long time ago. Vladimir Putin was the head of the KGB. He's not a choir boy. President Trump's defense of himself is that he needs to work with the Russians to reach some sort of a nuclear agreement. We have a potentially dangerous situation around the globe with nuclear weapons, that he feels he needs to work with Vladimir Putin. And remember that Ronald Reagan, his staff at the time surrounding him when he went to Berlin to speak, said, no matter what you do, don't say tear down this wall. Don't say that. Don't say that. They took it out of the speech, and he, in pencil, put it back in and said, Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall. He didn't listen to his advisors either. That's one point. But the other point is just the media's handling of this, because President Obama congratulated Vladimir Putin when he was elected also. when Obama was in office. And of course, you remember that I said yesterday, but I have to repeat it, that Putin was already doing horrible things. There were other, Vyshenko, I think, was one of the the victims of poisoning. I remember seeing a picture of him emaciated in a hospital bed. This was during Barack Obama's presidency. And so don't give me that suddenly Putin is worse. He wasn't. In fact, he did terrible things. I remember when he marched into Georgia, now autonomous nation south of Russia, and literally took it over. And they were friends of ours. Remember when when Obama agreed with Putin to take away the nuclear defense of those countries that we had agreed to help arm themselves and protect themselves against out of control Russia? This all happened under Barack Obama. But Barack Obama, just speaking of congratulatory phone calls, call President Mohamed Morsi, the head of the Muslim Brotherhood, a terrorist organization who was elected in Egypt after Barack Obama helped the downfall of the current president, who was at the very least, you could say, an ally of this country. But he called and congratulated Mohamed Morsi, the terrorist. He also called Iran's president when he was elected because, you know, they were great buddies. And Iran was, you know what, responsible for almost all the IEDs who blew up so many of our soldiers who are now wounded and have lost limbs. Iran, you know, backing and supporting terrorism worldwide in every country, or, well, in the countries where terrorism is manifesting itself, which is almost, I guess it's not every, but a lot of countries. Erdogan, the Turkish guy who wants to be the new head of the Ottoman Empire, who has revealed himself to be an Islamist, who Obama famously said was his best friend in terms of international leaders. He called to congratulate him, too. Remember that Erdogan has killed his own people in a coup. This happened in just the last few years. So don't give me this ridiculous outrage at President Trump congratulating Vladimir Putin on an election. Meanwhile, what matters is what the government is actually doing, and they have instilled the most stringent trade restrictions against Russia of anyone, including the Obama administration. So the proof, friends, is in the pudding. All right, so then yesterday there was a hearing on Capitol Hill, and of course the idea is that, Russia affected our election. We all know they did, right? President Trump would not be president if it hadn't been for the Russians. That's the narrative. So the former director of DHS under Barack Obama and the current director under President Trump, Kristen Nielsen, were before Congress, and when they were asked point blank about how many votes were affected, this is what they said.
In 2016, were there any votes that were affected by this intrusion into any system in America?
Not to my knowledge, sir.
Secretary Nielsen?
We have no evidence that any votes were changed. Once these vulnerabilities have been made clear, it's not just Russia that we have to worry about, right? These are vulnerabilities and attack vectors that any adversary could pursue. So we think the threat remains high.
Yeah, so no votes were changed. Both of those secretaries, including Obama's, which really surprised me, to be honest with you, we are being whipped into a frenzy over the wrong things. The right things to be whipped into a frenzy are the things like this alleged story printed by ABC that the reason this is the narrative. The reason Attorney General Jeff Sessions fired Rod Rosenstein was because he had opened an investigation on Attorney General Sessions for doing the very same thing that he's firing Rod Rosenstein for. That's the narrative from ABC. Chris Wray, the current director of the FBI, was asked to comment on that, and this is what he said.
I'm committed to doing things objectively and independently and by the book. And I think that has to extend not just to our investigations, our intelligence analysis, but it also has to extend to personnel decisions and disciplinary decisions. I want to be careful about what I can say about the process, but I will tell you that my commitment to making sure that our process is followed, that it relies on objective input, and that most importantly, it is not based on political or partisan influence is something I am utterly unyielding on.
Okay, so Chris Wray setting the record straight on that, and there's so much more to say, but I'm choosing now to read something to you. This is a thread from a blog from a national security expert, and I think what he said, he has knowledge of inside information. I don't know what his name is, but it was shared with me from someone else I trust. I can't say that every single thing is true. I haven't vetted it. I don't know. He knows a great deal more than I do. But I want to tell you what he says about this. He said, today, ABC broke the story that Andrew McCabe on his own opened a criminal investigation into the sitting attorney general of the U.S. And this writer says this news has vast implications. And he points out that ABC is more closely tied to the Obama administration than any other network. And we'll get into that in just a second. This is breathtaking. We already know that Andrew McCabe was one of the primary conspirators in the plot to illegally spy on, manufacture evidence against, and then impeach a duly elected president using illegitimate, criminally obtained FISA warrants as pseudo-legal cover. The first implication of this revelation that the deputy director of the FBI covertly launched a criminal case against the AG is that the plan to remove this administration was wider than just removing the president. This specifically targeted the DOJ. This investigation was opened at a time before Sally Yates was fired. Remember, she was the acting attorney general for a short time. It was in, and then she refused to do what President Trump wanted her to do, and that's why she was fired on immigration. It was in an attempt to stop and failing that, remove Jeff Sessions. The ramifications would have been to install one of the conspirators as acting AG, like Sally Yates. Sally Yates was actively involved and instrumental in framing General Flynn over legitimate calls as part of his transition team duties as NATSEC advisor. It's important to remember the person running point on that with Yates was none other than Andrew McCabe. We also know from several verified news reports that Priebus, McGahn, and POTUS all asked Yates and McCabe about the Flynn case and were lied to shut them out. Think about this. At the exact time McCabe, Stroke, Yates, Bruce Orr, Page, Lisa Page, Priestap, Baker, Comey, these are all FBI people. Some names are not as familiar to you as others will be. At the time that they were actively spying on Team Trump, via the Carter Page Title I FISA warrant, they were actively running a case to frame the Attorney General of the United States. This is staggering. They were launching an effort to decapitate via show trials the entire executive branch. And there's more. Notice how this news came out 3 business days after McCabe's firing, but not before. This case isn't still open. Mueller cleared Sessions long ago. Think this all the way through. What outlet broke the news? ABC. Who was the most closely connected network to Team Obama and the coup? ABC. And then he goes on to make that link in detail. This is a calculated smear aimed entirely at Attorney General Sessions using a huge media outlet that will reach as many normal people as possible to paint McCabe's firing as revenge by the AG to cover up the true nature of what McCabe did. And then he goes on to say, this smear is going to run in every American household all week. These people are scared. He's talking about the deep state. And they are going nuclear to try to stop what's coming. And then he goes on about, talks about how Jeff Sessions was the most arduous confirmation of anyone. The attacks were led by Leahy and Franken. And by the way, McCabe opened his politically motivated case based on a letter from them. You know, actually, I will try to see if we can post this thread on our Facebook page so that you can read the whole thing, because I won't be able to do that. I have some other things that I want to share with you very efficiently, shall I say. We are still gathering signatures to stop Heifelblum from being nominated on the EEOC. If you didn't listen yesterday, I don't have time to go into it. Let's just say that she is a radical of all radicals. She's been renominated. It will be a 12-year term, and it's a disaster. So please go to afa.net, and you'll see at the top a box that'll have this a petition. We have 78,000 signers right now. So please help us with this, because we need to stop this for a number of reasons. Remember that this march for our lives with all these kids, they're expecting 500,000 in Washington on Saturday. So you might want to consider going and letting your voice be heard in a different way. Our friends at Goochland Tea Party, by the way, are having a big candidate forum Monday night at Goochland High School. And Nick Freitas, who was the Senate candidate that we interviewed recently, is going to be there. So is our good friend E.W. Jackson. They're both running for Senate. And if you want information on that, that's GoochlandTeaParty.org. GoochlandTeaParty.org. The meeting is Monday night. Well, last night, about 8:30... guess what happened? The text of the huge omnibus, and we say huge because you know why? It's 2,323 pages. It was released for the first time to members of Congress and senators. Only 4 had seen it. And now they're supposed to vote on this today. Does this remind you of anything else? Anything else that happened in the stealth of night? Obamacare and how it was ridiculed, and now Republican leaders doing the same, if not worse. Congressman Jim Jordan will join us next, and we'll talk about the implications of this. Don't go away. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Hi, I'm Jan Harper. If you're a pastor's wife like me, you probably know what it feels like to live in a fishbowl.
You know, that feeling like everybody is watching your every move? My husband Bert and I would like to invite you to a few days away from the fishbowl.
The annual AFA Pastor and Wife Fishbowl Retreat is 3 days and 2 nights of relaxation and building relationships. The retreat is hosted by Pastor Bert Harper of Exploring the Word and his wife Jan. Special guest speakers will include AFR morning personality J.J. Jasper and his wife Melanie. The AFA Fishbowl Retreat is set for October 9 through 11 at the Linden Valley Conference Center. Call 800-326-4543, extension 300, for registration and information. That's 800-326-4543, extension 300. Or visit repairingthefoundations.net. Registration is limited to the first 35 couples.
Get out of the fishbowl and into the AFA Pastor and Wife Fishbowl Retreat. We'll see you there.
Hi, this is Steve Tiber with 8 Days of Hope. We've seen God open up so many doors for us to help serve and love those who get affected by a natural disaster.
As the trees and the wind started crashing down around us, my wife was, of course, very diligently praying, you know, Lord, please be with us.
Very simply, we do it because God commands us to love others.
I see these volunteers all as a gift from God.
And I'm just grateful they're here, you know, helping out. It's a blessing.
If you're interested in becoming a part of what God's doing through 8 Days of Hope, please go to 8daysofhope.com, click on Get Involved, submit your email address.
I've noticed that whenever there's a time in my life when things might be a little gloomy, the number one thing that I can do is to go serve somebody.
And I would encourage anyone else to, it's worth it. Come out and do it next time if you didn't make it to this one. And the Father will really bless you in it.
Thank you so much for your prayers and volunteering with 8 Days of Hope.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Dr. Robert Bowen. I am the Dean of Science, Technology, Engineering, and Mathematics, and I'm an Associate Professor of Physiology. So one of the benefits of being a faculty member at TMU is not only are we allowed to speak the gospel in the classroom and within our areas of discipline, we're encouraged to do so. Everybody needs to know the love of Christ. And so I try to incorporate in my classes, and one of the places that I incorporate in the most is in my office when I have students come in.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
The Country Music Association sparked a bizarre controversy after they appointed Mike Huckabee to its charitable foundation. LGBT activists protested, citing the former Arkansas governor's religious beliefs on marriage and his support for the National Rifle Association. Jason Owen, who handles artists like Faith Hill and Little Big Town, called Huckabee's pick grossly offensive. Mr. Owen is gay and married. He blasted CMA for amplifying what he called sick voices. 24 hours later, Governor Huckabee resigned, writing that if the industry does not want people of faith or people who hold conservative and traditional political views, then so be it. If nothing else, this terribly offensive episode has exposed an ugly truth. The Country Music Association has become overrun by a bunch of anti-Christian, gun-hating bigots. What in the name of Minnie Pearl is going on in Nashville? I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
I look at the facts. The fact is the Attorney General of the United States met with the former President of the United States just days before his wife, Secretary Clinton, was scheduled to be interviewed by the FBI. You don't think that's unusual? And the President of the United States at the time said, oh, no big deal. I think that's highly unusual. Why did the Attorney General Lynch say she wasn't even going to make the decision? She turned it over to James Comey. Never happens. Never happens yet. It did with the Clinton investigation. And oh, by the way, the guy who ran that investigation, Peter Strzok, who interviewed Clinton, Aberdeen Mills, who interviewed all these folks, ran the Clinton investigation. He's the same guy who launched the Russian investigation, namely Peter Strzok. And we know with the text message we've now seen between him and Lisa Page, we know where Peter Strzok comes from. So, of course, if anyone was President Trump, they'd be frustrated by what if you were being investigated by the former head of the FBI and he had 15 lawyers looking into your life and all of a sudden he says, now I want your personal finances? Who wouldn't be frustrated by that? So that there's got to be a frustration level on the part of the president. That's just normal. But the White House has been very clear. They want Mueller to finish his investigation. All I'm saying is let's get it done, for goodness sake. It's been a year now. It's time to get some conclusion to this.
That was the voice that's familiar to most of us now, Congressman Jim Jordan, who has been such a champion as he served in Congress on our behalf. He was on Meet the Press with Katie Turr and expressing really what I feel, too, is when the president, you know, exasperates on Twitter, you have to understand why, and you have to ask the question, as Congressman Jordan just did, how would you feel if all of these things were happening to you and your family, and how would you respond? But I want to talk to Congressman Jordan about some other disaster that has happened in the last 24 hours, and it is the omnibus bill, 2,232 pages. According to my inbox, it came out at 8:16 last night, and I've asked Congressman Jordan to join us this morning. Congressman, first of all, let me just say, of course, we're so grateful to you and your service, but I always hasten to try to help people to understand the enormous pressures that you and the members of the Freedom Caucus and the other few conservatives who are not with you face. You guys are giving it all on our behalf, and I just, it's a thankless job, and because, honestly, because you stay there, I stay here, because I want to give you some backup, and it's a good thing to have you this morning.
But it's no harder than what you know, hardworking American families have to deal with every day, trying to make a living and chase their goals and dreams. And this is the greatest country ever, and we appreciate what you do. But you're right; this bill was unveiled 12 hours ago. But not to worry, 12 hours is plenty of time to figure out what's in a 2,000-page piece of legislation that spends $1.3 trillion. I mean, that's plenty of time, right? Okay. This might be the worst bill I have ever seen House Republican leadership allow to come to the floor, and the worst bill that they've ever put on the floor. It's the second largest spending increase in a decade, $1.3 trillion. We've had 12 hours now to look at it. We're going to vote on it sometime later today. Funds Planned Parenthood, makes it difficult for law-abiding citizens it infringes on their Second Amendment liberties. It is just not the kind of legislation we need to pass, and certainly not what the American people elected us to do.
I'm going to come back to some of the specifics of it in just a second, what we can possibly know about it. You know, we have to explain that this was four people in a room who did this. This is at least probably they had some help from people that were not elected to serve the American people. I bet they had some input from others. But this is McConnell and Ryan working with Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer. They kept a tight lid on this. And how insulting that the members of Congress and the other members of the Senate could not even be told or brought into the loop of what was being discussed. This must be very offensive, not just to conservatives in Congress, but to the others too, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, the process is certainly offensive. The policies are bad. Now, I think most Democrats like the policies. They like the fact that Planned Parenthood is going to continue to be able to get taxpayer dollars. They like the fact that sanctuary cities are going to be able to continue to get taxpayer dollars. And probably a lot of Democrats like the fact that some unelected Democrats could actually take away people's law, Second Amendment liberties, and not have that actually adjudicated in a court of law. So they probably like that fact. Plus, Democrats probably like the fact that it spends $1.3 trillion. So they may like all that, but they certainly don't like the process. No one likes the process. And when you have a bad process, you typically get bad policy, and that's certainly being played out with this piece of legislation.
You know, one thing that Mitch McConnell loves about this is the earmark for political party organizations. And I don't know if you want to address that, but that's really going to have a detrimental effect on people like you. You want to say a word about that?
Yeah, we're still trying to find out what's in the bill relative to campaign finance. If, in fact, we don't think they put in the most egregious thing, which would have given the political parties they already have an advantage over other political action committees. But if they made even different, more changes that we oppose, allowing them to coordinate with campaigns, allowing them to get the lowest unit rate when it comes to advertising, and not give that same ability to other, in our case, conservative PACs that we care about, that is an equal protection problem. That is a First Amendment problem, and those kind of things shouldn't happen. So we're still combing through the bill. Again, we just got it 12 hours ago. So we're looking to see what exactly may be in it relative to campaign finance. But if those provisions are in, those are terrible.
And, of course, the net effect of that is that the leadership will protect the incumbents that they like, and the rest of you will be on your own. And, you know, I'm just curious. Sorry, this is a little sidetracked, but I just have to ask you, is Speaker Ryan still withholding the PAC money of the reelection money for the House from the conservative caucus?
No, we don't think that's happening. But remember, if money is the old line, money is fungible. So if they're not helping, if they have some money that they are allowing conservatives to receive, frees up other money that they can do other things with. That could be good. But typically, we're just nervous about that because we've seen it happen in the past. We don't believe it's happened under Speaker Ryan, but it did take place with the previous speaker, with some of our folks in tough primaries. So it's a concern. But look, you know, we're gonna have our guys. They need to be ready and win races on their own. So we're looking through the bill and see what campaign finance changes may in fact be in this.
Let me just read to you. You may have seen this and you may not. I know I just saw you on television a few minutes ago, so I know you're busy. And I appreciate you spending time with us this morning. But this is what Heritage is saying about this. They're saying the omnibus spending bill unveiled this evening is an embarrassing rundown of broken promises and leaves zero doubt that Congress has turned its back on its commitments to the American people. At a time when Congress should be reinstituting spending caps and enacting other measures to put our nation's spending on a fiscally responsible track, it is unshackling the Washington swamp to spend without constraint. And then one more quote, and you may have heard this one. This is from Louisiana Senator John Kennedy. And he said, sorry, I have to read this with a straight face. This is a Great Dane-sized whiz down the leg of every taxpayer. Everyone who participates in this process ought to put a bag over their heads. That's how bad it's viewed by some members of Congress.
I can't say it any better. It is that bad. It's going to lead to a $1 trillion deficit this fiscal year alone. Already we have a $21 trillion debt. This is the second largest spending increase, I think, in American history, second only to the Obama stimulus package, and we know how great that was. And it funds things like, as I've said before, sanctuary cities, Planned Parenthood, and restricts Second Amendment liberties. It also funds the big gateway project earmarked boondoggle in New York City, but doesn't actually fund the border security wall. The one thing we told the American people we were going to fund, it doesn't do. So I see no way that this bill is in any way consistent with what the American people sent us to Washington to accomplish. And for all those reasons, we should oppose it. We should say no to this. Go back to the drawing board and put together legislation that doesn't continue to bankrupt the country and is consistent with the values the American people elected us to defend.
I mean, how would that happen, though, Congressman? I don't, you know, I've been trying to get people to call their congressman in the last few days we've been covering this to say vote no on this. But practically speaking, if you were to map it out, what would that look? I mean, I don't mean the bill, but what would the process to get this thing stopped look like?
Sandy, we were poised to win this whole debate just a few weeks ago. So remember about 2 months ago when Chuck Schumer shut down the government because he said amnesty was more important than funding our troops. The American people quickly gave him a lesson and said, Chuck, we disagree with you, and we disagree with you strongly. 3 days later, he opened back up the government. 3 weeks after that, we sent Chuck Schumer the exact same bill with one major difference. We in the House. We said we're going to fund the troops for the whole year, not just a few weeks. And we're going to give them the troops a pay raise, and we're going to do what needs to be done for our military. But we didn't grow the rest of government, and we didn't put these bad policies in that proposal, and we sent that over. And instead of just holding firm, right on the cusp of victory and poised to win the debate, instead of just holding firm and having the debate and winning, we said, oh, no, let's just do what Washington always does. Let's just spend more money on everything, not just national defense, which is what the Constitution says we're supposed to prioritize at the federal government. Let's spend it on national defense and all these other programs, all the other just regular government baloney and programs we spend on. And we grew government $63 billion more than we had to. That's where we blew it. And now this is the bill that specifies where those big increases actually go, and that's why it's so bad.
Okay, but still the question is in process here because, if I were in the Senate, or if I were Mitch McConnell, I'd say to you this morning, yes, but I've got that 60-vote, cloture, and I've got to get 60 votes, and how would you do that?
So first of all, that does need to be changed. But even if you have that, you still have to have the political will to have the debate. You have to say, okay, Chuck Schumer, we're going to fund the military at the level we need to defend this country, but we're not going to grow the rest of government. And if you don't like that, then let's have a national debate. Let's have the debate. Instead, we just forfeited. We just said, oh, the ref was getting ready to blow the whistle. And we said, oh, instead of wrestling the match, we're just going to forfeit and we'll just spend money on everything else. No, you have to have the political will to debate and stand firm and remember what you told the voters you were going to do. And they'll say, you know what? That's what they campaigned on. That's why we elected Republicans. So we'll have the debate and we win. Plus, we have the bully pulpit of the White House now. If we're having a real debate and the president is out there debating as well, we got a great chance to win. Instead, what happened is, let's just do the easy thing. Let's do the convenient thing. Let's spend money on everything, and let's just further bankrupt the country. After all, that's easier. Let's just do what the Democrats want. No, that's why we have elections. So it's all about political will, and frankly, we didn't have it, and instead our leadership puts on the floor of the House the worst bill I've seen in 10 years.
Yeah, my understanding, Speaker Ryan is leading with, in every conversation, all this great money going to the military and giving raises. And of course, we love the military. I love the military. There are lots of military people listening to this show. But it's the rest of it is just egregious. It is shameful. And, as you guys go back to your districts and run for 2018, to me, this is like a nail in the coffin. I just don't see how they think you're going to prevail. I mean, in general, I think you'll prevail in your district. But I mean, just in general, how are Republicans going to prevail in the elections given what they're doing here?
You don't think the second largest spending increase in history, running a $1 trillion deficit and funding Planned Parenthood, sanctuary cities, and restricting Second Amendment rights, you don't think that's going to help us in the election? I mean, of course you're right. This is a terrible bill, and it's not going to help us. But because it's not consistent with what we were elected to do. I think I say this all the time, but it's so basic to me. The job's pretty simple. What did you tell the American people we were going to do when they gave you the privilege to come serve them and their families and their businesses in the United States Congress? And whatever you told them, do that. This is not anywhere close to what we told them. And that is the problem. That's why so many people... Now, 2017 and the things that President Trump got accomplished was a good year. We actually reduced regulations. We lowered taxes. The economy is growing. The embassy is going to Jerusalem. ISIS is backpedaling. Neil Gorsuch is on the Supreme Court. 2017 was a darn good year. But the way we're starting off 2018 with this piece of legislation, you're exactly right. This is bad and not in any way what we're supposed to be focused on.
Now, I've heard others serving in Congress in the last few hours here suggesting at least putting the brakes on by asking for short-term CR because there's no time to read this bill. I mean, that is a good... Yeah. I mean, how do you feel about that? Would that be at least a helpful step to put the brakes on this a bit?
Of course, because it's common sense. You can't read 2,200 pages in 12 hours and vote on a bill that spends $1.3 trillion. There's no way to digest it all. So you know what's going to happen? In a couple weeks, if this thing passes, in a couple weeks we're going to discover, oh, Shazam, there's something in there that we didn't know about that's pretty darn bad. That's even worse than what I've already described here on our conversation. So that's what's going to, it always does. When you rush these things through, there's always something stupid in there that people haven't discovered, or it could just be a mistake in how it was drafted. But we always discovered a few weeks out, oh, darn, we didn't mean to do that. Well, better to take a little time and get it right the first time than have to go back and correct something stupid because you were in a hurry to get it done.
But also, the similarity between this and, like, for instance, Obamacare, Christmas Eve, whatever year that was, 2010 maybe.
Yeah.
This is right before Congress is taking their Easter break, right? There'd be 2-week recess. And so we know how the Senate is about their time off. They only work 2.5 days a week as it is. And so there's a great pressure on you guys. I'm sure you have plans, personal plans, travel plans, plans with family. So there's another pressure to make people vote yes on this. Do you have any doubt at all that this thing's going to pass today?
It's probably going to pass, but that doesn't mean you don't put up the fight, that you don't have the argument, and you don't lay out for the American people what's going on here. And that's what we're continuing to do in the Freedom Caucus. We're going to continue to push. I think there's going to be several of us even vote against the rule because this process is that we offered 3 amendments last night that would clean things up and at least make a terrible bill slightly better. And my guess is those amendments weren't made in order. I haven't seen the paperwork this morning, but we were up late last night offering it with Mr. Massey and I. Offered an amendment to take out the provision that would restrict Second Amendment liberties for law-abiding citizens. And we had Mr. Garrett, another member of the Freedom Caucus, offer the amendment that would say no monies can go to an organization like Planned Parenthood, who's been caught on video engaging in all the repulsive activities that they engaged in. And then we had another amendment from Freedom Caucus member Andy Biggs, who said sanctuary cities should not be getting your tax dollars.
All right,
either.
So you guys, we're running out of time here. You guys are not giving up, and you know what? You're a great example to us to not give up either. And I think of the verse, do not be weary in well-doing. We'll pray for you, Congressman, and we'll call our congressman and tell him to vote no. Thank you so much.
And the Lord said, what have you done? The voice of your brother's blood is crying out to me from the ground. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Corner. Actress and outspoken abortion advocate Martha Plimpton boasted proudly to a Seattle audience that she got her first abortion at age 19 at a Seattle Planned Parenthood and that it was her best abortion, heads and tails above the rest. 46-year-old Plimpton followed that declaration with a loud yay as she triumphantly stretched her arm skyward. Thomas Jefferson once said, indeed, I tremble for my country when I reflect that God is just, that his justice cannot sleep forever.
Listen to the Hamilton Corner, weekdays from 5 to 6 p.m. Central on AFR. For more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
If God is indeed in control of all things, then why do his followers continue to suffer? Alistair Begg addresses this emotional question this week on Truth for Life as he continues our series titled Life After Death. Listen Monday through Friday to Truth for Life with Alistair Begg.
Truth for Life, weekday mornings at 11:30 Central on AFR and online at afr.net.
Exposing Washington with Walker Wildman.
So who is responsible for the dysfunction in Washington? That's what we're going to be discussing today.
We have become one of the most litigious societies on the planet.
The goal of this show is to bring clarity to the news coming out of Washington, D.C., and to expose the deception that has plagued our nation's capital for decades.
Exposing Washington.
Each Saturday at 2:30 p.m. Central.
On American Family Radio.
Are you personally offended by foul language on television? Even well-written, well-acted programming may be riddled with profanity and undesirable dialogue. The TV Guardian app is technology that mutes and replaces profanity, sexual references, and sacrilegious language from television programs and movies. You see, programmers are required to provide closed captioning. TV Guardian uses the closed caption to look ahead, find the offensive language, mute it, and replace the phrasing in the caption. Users of the TV Guardian app can set the filters for their family's needs, using strict, moderate, or tolerant settings, with or without filtering for religious or sexual references. The TV Guardian app is now providing profanity-free programming. Information is available at tvguardian.com/dish. TV Guardian. .com/dish.
American Family Radio is thankful for the support of TV Guardian.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Donald Trump has once again been sabotaged by leaks from inside his administration. This time, someone with access to materials prepared for the recent presidential phone call with Vladimir Putin gave them to the Washington Post, highlighting the staff's admonition not to congratulate the Russian dictator on his recent re-election, and the fact that Mr. Trump did it anyway. The intended target of this disclosure presumably was President Trump, but American statecraft is a casualty too. Fortunately, the close-hold handling of such information means that very few officials would have had access to the briefing cards and the actual content of the two presidents' conversation. Prime suspects are National Security Advisor H.R. McMaster and Obama holdovers employed in his personal office. McMaster should have been fired long ago for bad personnel decisions, among other misconduct. Mr. President, seize the day. This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
All right, Sandy Rios back with you. I'm giving you lots of assignments this morning, aren't I? You know what? It is working together in these ways that where we can actually affect change. And we're trying to do that. You know, I always think, you know, the left is so organized. It's pretty awesome. Really, they are. You have to admire that. But I also know that, as I've said many times before, one of the reasons they're so organized is because they don't really Now, there are some exceptions to this, I'm sure, but in general, the left does not really believe in God, not in a personal God who guides and really is sovereign, so that it makes us feel differently about the need to manage all the circumstances of the world. We recognize that we can't, but that some people take that too far theologically for my taste, because I do not believe that means just let go and let God, or God's in charge of everything, so I don't have to do anything. You know, I don't believe that's scripture. And I think when you go back to the early church and you saw people sitting around and Paul admonishing them that if they didn't work, they didn't eat, and that they were not to, they said they were sitting and waiting for the return of Christ. And he was like, no, get up and get busy. And so I think that that's where I sit. That's where I sit. That's where I stand, getting up and getting busy. All right. We're going to have, by the way, American Family Radio, of course, that's without saying it, that's what we all believe. All the hosts, we talk every day and try to get you to respond, motivating ourselves and our country and our people to love God, to pray and be on their knees, and then get up and work, roll up their sleeves and do something. And as I say every day when I open the show, do something, say something. You can't do everything. That's where God comes in. You recognize, I'm with a group that in Washington every week, and often I will pray, you know, Lord, this is overwhelming. It's just beyond our pay grade. There is no way. The things we're discussing today, we are just a few people. How can we do this? We need your help. And that's the perspective that we must have. Knowing that, we also know that God, look, would you rather have all the organizational skills and all the networks, or would you have God? Well, silly question, because God has so much more power than we have, and he does listen to the prayers of his people. All right, but I want to get practical here. American Family Radio has a share-a-thon. You know that. We have it in the fall, and we have it in the spring. It's just two weeks every year. Actually, not 2 weeks. It's just 3 days. And we don't do a lot of asking for your financial help, but this is when we do. And we try. It's fun. You know, it's actually a lot of fun. And so it's April 17th through the 19th. And one way we make it fun is to ask you to join us. And the way you do that is that you can call on a number, which is 877-876-8893, and just tell, you know, what has American Family Radio meant to you? What did you learn? What has it motivated you? Was there a moment where God spoke to you? You know, what do you like? I guess you could even say what you don't like. That would help us a great deal. We might not use that for Share-a-thon, really just call and speak from your heart about what American Family Radio has been to you. And you can do that by calling 877-876-8893. That's 877-876-8893. I want to also tell you that, you know, American Family of our film division, American Family Studios, has just won an award. The God Who Speaks that we've told you about, our new documentary, was named Best Documentary at the Christian Worldview Film Festival. And so that's a real compliment. And if you would like to get that, it's a powerful, powerful video, one that you can just will encourage you in all the right ways, a substance and content. You know, our faith gets stronger based on fact. Emotion is important. God does not factor out emotion, but we have to learn, go deep in God's word, and that's what builds faith. You know, faith without, how can they believe if they don't hear? And it's not just hearing that Jesus died. There's a lot more to it. You do know that, right? The discipleship of following Christ. So anyway, the God Who Speaks, I think you will love it. And so AFR.net is the place that you go for that award-winning video. All right, and I wanted to play something. You know, this is a time when lots of Christian films are coming out that I can only imagine is out right now. And IndieWire is reporting that in just one weekend, it nearly cracked the top 20 of all Christian films released since 1980. So that's really good. It's doing well. I haven't seen it, but I hear it's very good. But there's another movie coming out Friday night. It's called Paul, Apostle of Christ. Jim Caviezel, who played Jesus in The Passion of Christ? I think Jim Caviezel was interviewed by our friend Rick Manning at a film premiere of this movie, Paul, Apostle of Christ. just a few days ago. And so Rick asked him, Rick told him, you know, I do this. This is going to be a political audience that's going to hear this, people involved in politics in D.C. And what would you say to them? And this is Jim's response.
In terms of persecution around the world, what message would you like for that audience to hear as it relates to this movie?
Well, you mean as far as the Chaldeans, Coptics, and Syrian Christians that were crucified on Good Friday last year? I would say the United States, we got to, as Christians, start not being afraid. Every man dies, not every man really lives. And in this film, what Paul says at the end is really powerful: to live as Christ, to die as gain. We all die, man. It's how you live your life. And there are a lot of people out there right now that need our help. And we, as Christians, we have to stop being afraid of that. And, you know, and I think modern-day Christians really struggle with death. And this is, and Billy Graham just died, but he had 99 years. I mean, a lot of people cried, but my God, if you don't believe that man's with Jesus, then what kind of faith do you have?
Did you catch that? He says every man dies, but not every man lives. We're all going to die, man. That's what he said to Rick. We need to stop being afraid of that. Now, he's talking about Christians. Non-Christians have plenty to be afraid about in regard to dying. But that's Jim Caviezel, star of the movie Paul, Apostle of Christ, which is coming out Friday night. In honor of Easter. I want to tell you something practical before I get to some email here. I'm actually leaving for Scotland today. When I get off the air, we'll be scurrying around and getting on a plane and making our way over there to see my son and his wife and our four little grandchildren. So it's going to be a wonderful trip. And so you wonder, well, what's going to happen here when I tune in? Well, lots of great things, because Fred Jackson is filling in most mornings of the mornings that we need a host. And Matt Barber will also be hosting. So you'll be in good hands to hear the live and active news. But you're going to be hearing my voice. You'll hardly know I'm gone. On this Friday, we're going to be talking to a Bavarian journalist about the effects of Islam in Germany right now, and how he got in the crosshairs of the German political hate speech movement and got charged with crimes himself. It's a great story. It's a sad story, but a great story. Mark Morano will join us on March 28th on his new book called On Climate Change, The Politically Correct Guide to Climate Change. That's what it is. And he's a fun guy, and it's just a great, you'll enjoy that. We have a very special program for you on Good Friday that will be very worshipful. Mark Tooley will be joining us to talk about religious persecution around the world, kind of tying into what Jim Caviezel was just talking about. And then the producer of the movie Chappaquiddick, which is the story of Ted Kennedy driving off the bridge and killing his companion in the car, Mary Jo Kopechnik, and how he left the scene of the crime. It's in the movie Chappaquiddick. And that producer has joined me on, and it will be airing on April the 4th, which is actually the day that that movie comes out. So you'll enjoy that. You will enjoy what we have planned for you for the next couple of weeks. And I certainly do appreciate the chance to be away, because I don't see my children much. I haven't seen my little baby granddaughter in 7 months. So you can imagine that it's children change a lot. So it's just a great blessing to me to be able to do that. I want to read to you some email we've gotten in the remaining moments that we have in regards to the walkout with the students. I got an email from Susan, who's a grandparent. She has a 16-year-old grandson, and he lives with them. And they were organizing at her school, and she said, I asked him who organized it, the walkout, and he said it was one student that he knew well. We had a discussion about who was really behind this, all the people from the left that you have given us wonderful information on. He really didn't want to participate, but I told him that he wanted to participate, but I told him that he would not be allowed to leave class to do this, and I didn't give him any other options. And she said, when he got home Wednesday, I asked how many students participated. He said 200 kids out of 3,000. That's what happened in their school. So that's a story you probably won't hear on the press. And I'm so glad that the information we gave had impact. At least maybe it has in some of your, it was a BuzzFeed article, by the way. We should put that back on our Facebook page, Adam, so that people can review that. It's pretty stunning, which leads me to the other side of the coin. This is from Josh, who writes me often. Josh is a teacher. He's been teaching you for 10 years. this is what he says. Dear Sandy, I've been listening to you talk these last several days all about how actual students couldn't possibly be behind protests against gun violence and in favor of common sense gun control, and it is maddening. And Josh, as you just heard me say, actually the information that I reported is out of BuzzFeed, which is no conservative site, as you well know. They talk in great detail. In fact, they were pretty gleeful about the involvement of Debbie Wasserman Schultz immediately getting involved with the students as soon as the shooting took place, bringing in a PR firm that works with the entertainment industry, teachers' unions, Hollywood celebrities, Planned Parenthood. I mean, it was an endless list, and it was quantified, the help that they were giving. And BuzzFeed was quite happy about it, so perhaps you'll want to see that so you know that I'm not, like, making that up. And Josh goes on to talk about his experience. He says, the public high school I attended granted our student government the power to override the principal's veto with a two-thirds majority. Students could appeal disciplinary decisions to a committee that had a student majority on it. When I was there, we tackled the heady issue of installing condom machines in the school's bathrooms. We got a course in philosophy added to the curriculum. We planned speaker series on civil rights and body image. What I learned from the 3 years I observed in writing my thesis on this is that the more real power you can entrust to students, the more seriously they take the responsibility of leadership. You know what, Josh, let me just say, this might be the problem. You know, you're still young, too. I recognize you're a grown man and you've been teaching 10 years, but your generation and the subsequent one never knew its place among adults. Your expression here lets me know it's a big clue. You thought that you were the same as your teachers or your administrators, that you knew as much as they did, but you were not, and you didn't. You lacked experience, and your learning curve got cut short because you didn't listen or allow yourself to be taught, and I think that's still happening. Let me just illustrate what I'm talking about. You say in your email, the students of Stoneman Douglas are exemplars of how to grow a movement. Well, that's true. That's absolutely true. I've got no, that's absolutely true. Then he says, there are plenty of movements for social justice and equal rights around the globe for which students have served as a catalyst. And so Josh, I have to laugh. You think I don't know that? You think I don't know that? Have you ever heard of the Nazi youth? Did you live through the hippie generation that I lived through? I think I know a little bit about kids being involved in social movements, but I appreciate the information from you. But again, I think, Josh, you don't know your place. Honestly, you think because you have some knowledge that you know better than someone like me, but you don't have wisdom and experience that comes with age, and you can't get that in a textbook. You can't take a pill. And you can't protest your way into the knowledge. I can tell even from your email, you have limited understanding. I'm just telling you, you're not obligated to listen, and you do listen. That's a credit to you. I know you get angry listening to me, but you need to listen because I know more than you know. I don't have more book knowledge. I probably don't, although I don't know. I've read a lot, seen a lot, done a lot, but I've lived a long time. So there's knowledge that you... That's why at talk radio, young people don't do well on that, because you don't know what you don't know. You have a limited base of understanding that's limited by your age and experience. And also, you know, I have to tell you, you know, you talk about student movements. I was on student council my entire high school. I ran the elections. I ran school dances. I know a little bit about student leadership, but we knew our place then. We weren't not telling our teachers what to do, and we were not informing them. He goes on to say that they were asking his students, 11 and 12-year-olds, about Parkland, and they thought that semi-automatic weapons ought to be illegal and that Trump's call to arm more teachers would make them feel far less safe. And you think that's a legitimate point? Like, are you trying to tell me that 11 and 12-year-olds would know what would make them more safe? Did you not see in Maryland just last week a resource officer with a gun took down a shooter who could have killed so many more people in that school? Josh, you don't know what you don't know, and neither do your kids. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.